Have you suddenly been overcome with an irresistible urge to wash your potato? Are you looking out at the world and really trying to figure out what the hell is going on out there? Well, I'll tell you what, you've come to the right place to at least find out some pieces of that big puzzle out there. Welcome to the 100th Monkey Radio with Tom and Ramon. Wow, we've got a good show lined up for you tonight. And that was, who was that, Ramon?
That was Blaze featuring, the name just escaped me. It's a Call Stand for Love. Blaze. The Shelter Mix.
Garadu or something like that, right?
Garadu, that's it.
Garadu. Garadu. Take a Stand for Love. That's, yeah, I like
that. That's a song that came out like back in the 1990s, mid-90s to late 90s.
Yeah, I like that beat. Takes me back a couple of years, that beat does. So, guys, you want to check out the website? Ramon and I are starting to get active again. More active. Stuff's going up. We put out a show in the middle of the week last week. Has some really interesting info there on some people working on some of Otis T. Carr's old technology. And they're making quite a bit of progress there. So we got Ralph Ring, Ben, and Mark that joined us for that. And if you want to check out that second hour content, become a member. It's a dirt cheap. Join.
Very cheap.
Join
very
now.
Cheap. Very cheap.
So, Ramon, tell us, who have we got tonight?
We got actually a good friend of mine. I've gotten a chance to hang out with him a couple times. Two times in Washington and one time here in Japan. If you've been listening to the show, or you're friends with me on Facebook, you probably know who I'm talking about. Really cool guy. Let's see. John Riley is a researcher in alternative energy science with a diverse background from top secret projects at Lockheed Skunk Works Division to advanced special effects. His mission to see new perspectives and on technologies and human awareness takes him traveling the globe to unlock the secrets once known by the ancients. Let's welcome Mr. John D. Riley.
Yay! Well, it's an absolute pleasure to be here once again. Thank you very much.
So, yeah, and if you guys didn't catch the first show with him, I suggest you go to the archives and check that out.
Yeah, that first show was right after the big earthquake in Japan, and that was quite a thing on our minds at that time, and there were some very interesting anomalies, solar anomalies that happened right around those same times that we brought John on to talk about. But so, John, you've been out and about the world quite a bit since we talked to you in March. What's been going on?
Yes, very true. Well, since March, I embarked, actually went into Japan, as Ramon knows, and we actually connected, and we were talking about the radiation situation there and, you know, how this was kind of a global wake-up call. So since then, I returned a second time, and I got a lot of very powerful information when I was there the first time. And then when we went back, I did some presentations with some technologies that I currently work with, you know, to really help with the the benefits to bring people back into balance after the radiation exposures. So we went out and did some medical studies, different levels of presentations with the technologies that I build. And the doctors were very, very, very pleased with the results. And it was actually very tangible how you could just see the instantaneous effects on the human system. So I'm very, very proud to be a representative and to bring forth this technology, which is, again, is one of the ancient mysteries that I travel the world to connect the dots to bring it forth once again. And after leaving Japan, then I was off a couple weeks later to India. And that was a very, very profound experience for me. I was literally on top of one of the most sacred mountains on my birthday, standing before a Siddha. And what a lot of people in the world they've never heard of that term of what a Siddha is. And they're literally what we call superhuman. They actually move to the next state within our physical and consciousness and they literally have the ability to transmute the body. And the Siddha that I met, he has not eaten food or has drunk water for over 9 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're at this wonderful time where we're actually seeing the impossible.
Is he the one they did the a couple of years ago, maybe it was even last year, they actually took one of these guys into a hospital there in India and kept him under observation for like 3 weeks?
Yes, actually, that was a different Siddha that actually came down. He hasn't eaten food for decades, and of course, the first thing that the they didn't believe that this was possible. They didn't believe him until they isolated him for over 2 weeks, gave him no food, and they only gave him water to bathe himself. They measured it before, and then they measured it after he returned, and there was no water loss whatsoever. And he literally, for 2 weeks, he just thrived. They did, like, tests on him on so many levels, you know, x-rays, MRIs, and he was literally guided, you know, to allow them to do whatever they needed to do to understand what the physical body is capable of. You know, so of course, so in India, I found that very, very humorous when they talked about that they studied him for their future space program, and you know, to have astronauts that wouldn't have to eat, drink, or defecate would solve a lot of problems for long deep space.
Yeah, definitely
travel. But you'd also have these, you know, these siddhas, you know, these high conscious beings in these capsules, you know. So it was actually quite humorous, you know, but they have to justify it any way possible. And, you know, it's still amazing that they were completely perplexed, and they did put it out to the world, you know, to let them know what we are capable of.
Well, I didn't hear that on Fox News.
Yeah, I did.
It has not made it mainstream. What we'll notice in Western, we've noticed that very easily. It's very easy to see the influence of Western, the Western media, is that they only go with the consensus of what the information, to keep people only on certain levels of interest. They're not ready to literally release information that is going to free the minds of the masses. And, you know, the media, the producers, you know, knowing how producers think, they don't want to be the first ones to step into new territory unless it's something so profound that they have tangible evidence and enough science or history or documentation, so they don't consider, you know, because they think about risking their careers if they broadcast stuff like this. You know, so it's really, I'm really surprised that at this point in time, the Western or just the global news media has not released this, you know, this level of information. But it doesn't really matter, because more and more of them are coming off the mountains, you know, to literally show us what we're capable of and what we've actually forgotten. You know, this is some of their messages. They're not here to teach us anything. They're just here to remind us.
Well, you know, I'm looking out, and you know, you mentioned that the thing about the media, and them not wanting anything out there that helps to raise the consciousness. It's happening whether they like it or not.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, look at what's happening right now in our world. I mean, it's not just one isolated little country over in the Middle East or something like that that's having an uprising and saying enough.
Yeah, yes. I was actually surprised that here in Tokyo, John, they started the same thing. It's not ongoing like the one in New York and other places.
Oh, the Occupy Wall Street?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, I noticed that too.
Yeah, I was actually in shock.
Yes.
Yeah, the Japanese are very reserved when it comes to that sort of thing.
Yeah,
I can understand that. You know, and you know what's really interesting is that, let's do a little bit of let's go back in time just a little bit here, and remember what happened in mid January in Egypt, and how literally the people just said no more, and they literally occupied the square, and they literally stood and they said enough of this. And they literally, and that was the proclaimed information that we were talking about, how the globe is going to shift from this moment on. People are going to start to wake up.
Yeah.
And so now we can see what has happened just from that moment in Egypt and how it started to echo around the world. And it didn't lose momentum. It started building, but it started building, you know, from the ground up. We had to see that, you know, that energy start to happen and then swell. And now it's coming forth.
What I love the most is, as much as they tried to add other things, because I remember hearing that they were saying, like, oh, that's just the right-wing Muslims, you know, trying to take over. And
yes.
They were trying to add so many different things to it, and it had nothing to do with that. And what people noticed was that they couldn't buy it anymore from these big media companies.
Absolutely. Well, we're seeing the wonderful thing about the free media is now we're seeing so many people with cell phone cameras, different types of cameras, and they can catch. And now there's no way to control the media anymore. You know, it is being released almost instantaneously. And of course, we saw, you know, in Egypt where they actually shut down the internet and the cell phones to try to control the event that was happening, and then only allow the certain media streams, you know, that they were controlling to release it. So this is very interesting, but it didn't stop. And this is the wonderful thing that we're watching. We saw people finding ways, literally finding independent cell towers to tap into and to get this information out of. So we're seeing this expansion where we realize that the people will no longer stay in these cages anymore. And it's really interesting because what the news media did there in Egypt, just like they're doing here, the news media, they don't even know how to approach it. And they literally say they'll find someone on the street and they'll talk kind of random without giving really positive information about the reason why they're protesting. And the news media will jump on that and say they don't even really know what they're there for.
Right.
You know, they're just there causing a disturbance. And that's exactly how it starts. And we can go back to Egypt and see is that the people, they didn't have the plan to put someone else in office. They were just at the point where they said, this is enough. We will not tolerate this anymore. We are demanding the change. And we have to remove this and remove it now. And we will take nothing less. And so and that's all they had to do is they just had to realize and just say no more.
Yeah.
And that's how it started. And it's happening the same way here. And now what's really interesting is when we look at what's happening in the Occupy Wall Street situation, we're seeing where they had no leadership. Now we're seeing people with familiar faces from all aspects, from media, you know, to, you know, private businesses to corporations that are, you know, the new paradigm corporations stepping forth and actually speaking now. And so this is really wonderful to start seeing, you know, a lot of people that are stepping into the Occupy Wall Street energy.
Yep.
And it's just started. You know, that's what's really wonderful about it.
One of the things I found funny is that Bloomberg wanted them to leave so they can clean up the area. And what they did was they said no, and then they started cleaning the area themselves.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so, you know,
I
what?
Found that amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. And one of the wonderful things that I noticed my second time in Japan is that that is the cleanest country I've ever been in.
Isn't it?
The people, I mean, there is no litter. They can make it a contest to find something, you know, that is like litter, that it would be considered litter on the street in Japan, because it doesn't exist. It's just amazing how everyone's so conscious about cleaning up and keeping.
And
it
here's
clean.
Here's the big thing: you can't even find a garbage can. It's so hard to find a garbage can here.
That made it even more interesting.
You know. So, it's like, for example, in New York, there's a garbage can in each corner, yet
oh,
there's
absolutely.
So much garbage.
Exactly. Same thing here in, you know, I live in Santa Monica in L.A. You have trash cans everywhere, and there's litter everywhere still, you know, at the same time. And I hear the street cleaner go up and down my street, like, you know, actually twice a day. You know, which, you know, Santa Monica does a great job keeping it clean. But it's just, I mean, but I was just so aware to just notice how clean it was there. So,
yeah, it's amazing because I never see anybody like bend down and pick up garbage. It's not like they're aware they don't put garbage on the floor.
Right.
So there's never any need for them to really pick it up.
Yeah, that's true. They'll keep it with them until they actually get to a receptacle that they can drop it off in. You know, just different ways. It's really I just love that way of thinking. That was like that when I was there 17 years ago. It was just so clean, and people were just so aware about that. So, yeah, that's I know we kind of shifted subjects, but it's kind of important to see that when we understand what Bloomberg wanted to do. And then consciously the people just said, oh, we'll clean up. You know, and so that really shows that their intentions are so pure and peaceful. Right. They're not there to riot. They're not there to, you know, like, you know, to go aggressive, you know. And you know, when we see the mentality, and this is we also got to see this in Egypt, and this is like a similarity that's happening here, is that when the people stood and the police came out there to try to control them and to push them back, they realized that there was it was 10-1 out there, 10 people to one police officer. And that's when they realized, and at that moment where the police were being pushed back, not aggressively, just by the force of the masses, you know, there was like 200 feet from between the police and the crowds, the police naturally just started to back up. Yeah. And then the police literally put their weapons down and said, "We're with the people now." And so we got to see that happen. And now we're noticing that we had to witness a critical mass here that happened in New York, you know, and how the officers were just blatantly aggressive. You know, the news media didn't, they wanted to show it one particular way. But then when all the different streams of YouTube camera angles came out, you know, it's conclusive that there were literally, you know, police officers that were instigating, just like was happening in Egypt. They had people that were literally told to go and instigate the crowd.
Right. You know, they want them to act violently so they can bring out the big guns.
Well, yeah. That's it. You know, and you know, now, but the wonderful thing about it is that stuff cannot be suppressed anymore. You know, and that's what's really wonderful about it. I mean, even like in Egypt, there was like a profound one where the police actually these two disruptors, you know, and there was like some photos on the internet, and we were all studying the photos, and then we noticed after they subdued these hostile people that when the police officers were bending down to, you know, to bind them, the people that were laying down that they were putting cuffs on had the exact same military shoes, the military issue shoes that the police officers did.
Right.
They had the same. Yeah, they had the same logos. They were literally put. You know, they were the standard issue shoes for the police. You know, so this is all the stuff that's coming forth, and it's amazing. You know, and it's amazing, and we had that one sergeant. I'm sure you probably caught the videos about that one sergeant. They said one Marine against 30 police. You know, and how he stood up and he just said, "What's going on here?" And he said, "I fought, you know, for my country, and now I come back, and our people, you know, you guys are, you know, being aggressive to them. They don't even have weapons. What's going on?" You know, so that video, of course, it's gone viral, and it's another wake up call in regards. And the police listened to him, which
is that
really
the one in Boston?
I think it was. Yeah, was it the Boston? I don't remember the exact location of where it was shot, but it was the one sergeant that actually stood there, and it's literally said one Marine against 30 police. You know, that was like the title of the video, and he's been on the Mox News since then, and just talking about, you know, that how his family's military background, but then he was just shocked to see this aggressive action from people that are just peacefully protesting and following their rights, you know, within the amendments. You know, so this is, you know, again, it's like the more and more it's all going to come to the surface. And this is all proclaimed in the energy fields. You know, we're realizing, you know, we're taking this huge shift, and it's measurable. We can literally measure it with our scientific equipment that the human consciousness is literally shifting the frequency of this planet. Okay. We're literally moving up an octave. And if when we do that, the base energies of fear can no longer be, you can no longer, you know, comfortably stay in it. Right. Now you'll have to go down to obtain fear. You know, it's when you step out of that fear frequency, now you're above it. That's when everything changes.
The last couple of months has been absolutely amazing for me in particular, watching and experiencing that rise in consciousness. I mean, I'm seeing it happen all over the place. And and I look at these all these prognosticators, these people that are talking. So and so gave me a message that this is going to happen. You know, the East Coast of the U.S. is going to fall under, is going to hit by a tsunami, or the West Coast is going to sink into the sea, or whatever. I look at those metaphors. I look at those images they're putting out there, and then my metaphorical mind grabs hold, and I transpose that onto the change in consciousness right now. And I see, okay, a wave going over the East Coast. This is where it starts. Yes, I see that. Okay, we Occupy Wall Street. That's where a big trigger in this change in consciousness is beginning. And that wave is the wave of consciousness going over it.
Absolutely.
So I don't see what I'm seeing is that the interpretation that people are use their own personal interpretations to put out these messages to others that the X is going to happen. But what people don't understand is the way we communicate with spirit is feeling and image, and it's extremely rare to have a dialogue like we're having here. It's extremely rare to have that type of a dialogue with spirit. At least from my experience, and most of the people that I've talked to have received their communications in the same manner. You know, it's knowings, it's the images and stuff. So, and it takes our personal experience and our lifetime worth of experience to decipher those messages that are coming through. So we put it out in the best possible terms that we can put it together at. Well, I've got a very symbolic and metaphorical mind. When I look at these things that people are putting out there, I see different. I see it different. I don't see physical calamity and disaster on the planet. I see that change in consciousness, what I see.
Perfect. That's what we understand. Why you see it that way is that we base that on our basis of human consciousness, our realization, our wakefulness to the understanding. And this is like when we start to understand the words for what they truly mean. And you can literally have a group of people in the room and you could say the end of the world as we know it is happening tomorrow. And then if you can literally see the consciousness of the people that are in the fear frequencies, and they'll literally see, you know, devastation and destruction, you know, horrible things. And then the ones that are on the higher conscious understanding, they're going to realize the bigger picture of what that means. You know, that time as we know it, you know, is about ready to drastically shift. The higher dimensional understanding of our existence is about ready to reveal the veil. And that's going to shift the world as we know it. You know, so when we start to understand these terminologies and based on our consciousness, we can start to understand what that true meaning is. And it's actually beautiful when we start to connect the dots and realizing that, you know, frequency dictates response or I don't know what's the best way to word this. But it's like, you know, our words – we perceive them based on our consciousness, based on the frequency that we are in.
Right, right.
So is that the same reason why we feel that we have to keep making up new words in order to explain these things that we don't remember experiencing before?
That's actually... Yeah, no, actually, that's when you talk about making up new words, we have to understand that the word alchemy that has been used on this planet has been distorted in many, many, many ways.
Many, many ways.
And this is the whole thing. When we realize that if you want to stand on the street and you want to say love out loud, 30 people are going to have 30 different interpretations of what that word means. And then if you're so bold and you stand out there and you say the word God, you speak God to the public, 30 different meanings to what that word means. You know, so what we understand, they have lost their trueness. The words have lost their trueness, you know, the frequencies to the origin of it. And so this is where we understand the word alchemy. So, and in the new paradigm of consciousness is to literally shift the way that we speak. So now we're not using words that might confuse people. We're bringing in new words or words that have been rarely used or different analogies so people can start connecting the dots and understanding it. You know, because if we do it from an educational standpoint, we're going to use common words and people are going to have their own interpretation of what was meant. And we might lose a lot of people, you know, because they think those words mean one thing, you know, at the time and they're going to be confused. You know, but then all of a sudden you start using analogies that everyone can reference to. They're going, I get that. I understand what you're saying.
Right. You know, I don't think I've ever seen in all my life, just in the last 5 years, all the etymology that's going on, the words, the people breaking it down and finding out the core meanings, where the origins and really digging into actually understanding what the meanings of different words in our language.
Oh, yeah. It's really great when we actually look them up. You know, and actually, you know, if you actually have a dictionary and you want to, like, literally understand the words that we use every day, what are their true meanings? And I started doing that. I said, you know what? I'm not going to use that word ever again. It's got too many, misunderstood meanings to it. And when I started asking people, what does this word mean to you? And I'm like, wow, really? That's what it means to you. And so I realized that those are the words that are in balance. So we have to literally remove them from our vocabulary.
It kind of reminds me of the word, and I'll break down the original meaning so people won't get offended. But it kind of reminds me of the word faggot. Mm. The original meaning of it is someone who picks up wood, a wood collector.
Yeah.
And that's I think 15th century meaning, and it's just changed. It's just such an opposite meaning to what it means now.
Oh yeah, it's like I remember back in junior high, and this one guy kept calling me a Nimrod, and I was like, "What the heck is a Nimrod?" And then I looked it up, and I know it went back in while we're on the a radio show, but if I look it up now, what the original term of it, you know, it goes back, you know, to, you know, ancient Aramaic. And, you know, it was actually, you know, Nimrod was actually a person.
Yeah, there's a King Nimrod.
Yeah, King Nimrod, yeah. And that it was really interesting when I looked it up and I said, you know, I should be, you know, next time he calls me, I'm going to say thank you. You
know, calling me King.
But looking at it from a derogatory standpoint, I finally looked it up and I realized, I said, that's not derogatory at all.
Wasn't he the one who legendary had sent people I'm trying to remember the story, but it was something how he sent some people through a portal and then God came through the portal or something like that, or a God being from our understanding?
If you go on Wikipedia, you know, it actually just talks about, you know, according to the book of Genesis, the son of Cush and great-grandson of Noah and the king of Shinar, he is depicted in the Tanakh as a man of power in the earth and a mighty hunter. You know, so, you know, and actually there was also, what was it, traditional associations him with the Tower of Babel. Led to his reputation as a king who was rebellious against Yahweh, you know, and, you know, so it's really interesting, you know, just, but how one word, you know, that is said in one way, all of a sudden something, you know, that guy kept calling me that. And so I looked it up and just realized it's like, how is that negative? You know, I had to look at that, you know, but it's just kind of funny, you know, when we realize is that, you know, just certain words, you know, that we literally have to start being responsible. And that's a key thing, is like really, really being responsible for what comes out of our mouth, right? Understanding what we're truly saying when we use certain words.
Right.
It's funny because especially I find around the age of 8 and 9, you kind of get programmed with these words and you don't know the meanings of them. You just use them.
Exactly.
And you grow up using them.
Yeah.
Like now it's, I find it hilarious because here, like, I have a lot of students who are getting into hip hop, and I'll hear them repeat the words, and I'll ask them in Japanese, "Do you know what that means?" and they're just like, "No, but it sounds cool."
It sounds cool, yeah. You know, a lot of kids, especially the teens, want to use curse words, and because they sound cool. And it's like, you know, I was talking to like a 12-year-old, and she says, "I can't wait till I'm old enough so I can curse, and my parents can't do anything about it." I'm like, "Well, why can't you wait?" She goes, "It's really cool to talk that way." I'm like, "Really?" I said, "You find it cool, you know, to talk like that?" I said, "But did you the frequency when you say it feels good to you?" And she's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Oh, okay." You know, so, and I had to, like, you know, take a step back and go, well, that's what they're being programmed, is that, you know, I want to curse like that. I want to say these words. That'll make me cool. You know, and of course, in peer pressure, it does. You know, if you curse to your friends, they go, "Ooh, wow, you cursed." You know, so they don't. Yeah, it is. It's pretty funny, you know, when we understand it. But, you know, the peer pressures, you know, I have a 13-year-old daughter that's going through it. You know, she's in it, and I'm doing the best that I can to, like, be supportive, you know, and then just hopefully that she stays conscious enough to just only go so far into it, and then to get a hold of it, and then make her conscious choices, you know, and, you know, not to force her to do anything, just saying, well, you know, it's your choice. You could do this or you can do that, you know, at this point in time, and you're going to have to ask yourself what's going to have the best outcome for you. Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay, well, so we kind of got off track a little bit. We were talking about where you've been and what you've been doing at the beginning here, and we really got way off sidetracked.
yeah, we took a journey there, didn't we? Yeah,
well, that's all right. So, well, back in India, you with the Siddha, and I don't think we got into too much of your experiences with this being.
Yes. Well, you know what? One of the things that kind of Ramon and I were talking about just before the show started was, you know, I mentioned jokingly, I said, well, I want to do this show completely in silence. And he laughed naturally and says, well, I don't think the listeners are ready to hear a show for 2 hours with nothing being said. And so we started talking about the psychic connections. It's like, and that's one of the most amazing experiences that I had once I connected to this Siddha, and he literally sent two people here to America to share this information that has never been shared with the West. It has never left the East for thousands of years. And you could talk to any yoga instructor, any yogi, guru, and mention certain words, and they'll have no idea what you're talking about. And that literally proves that this information was kept for so long, for centuries, and now it is time to release this knowledge once again. So these two people they went on a journey to the United States, and they've been presenting, you know, throughout the United States. They literally took a car and drove 10,000 miles and delivering this to about 3,000 people, you know, through their it was all word of mouth. And when they were here, they actually started here in Los Angeles. And I saw the advertisement for the presentation. I knew I just had to be there. And I was, like, called there, you know, in such an amazing way. And after, you know, asking them if they would present at my place, so I hosted them to a full – it was literally full capacity here. We had people sitting up the stairs. You know, there were all this – it was standing room only. And after that, you know, I had such a powerful – you know, confirmation that I am to arrive and to meet the Siddha that they are talking about. And it was really amazing. So once they handed me a picture of him, and I started to I linked into this photo, and he started to communicate with me. I'm really going to go out there and let people know that this was truly happening. And I completely agreed to this. And I understood exactly what was happening, that he had the ability to psychically oscillate and to lock onto us. And so he gave me precise information when to arrive to him. He said, you know, in honor, arrive to me on the day of your birth. Stand before me on the day of your birth. And he gave me specific information to confirm with the others that we were psychically connected. And it was very surreal, you know, to hold this for over 8 weeks. And even when I was arriving to him, when we were driving across country to go up the mountain where his temple is that he's building, and he lives in a cave, you know, on a mountain called Mahadevamalai, which means Shiva's mountain. And he literally, we stopped at the bottom of the mountain, and he literally sent me a message to bring him lotus flowers. And I said, I need to bring Siddha lotus flowers. And I went up to this lady, and I just took the whole bunch and gave her money and got back in the car. And I go, he wants me to hand these to him. And when they were videotaping, literally when I walked up, I had the greatest smile on my face, and I held these blossoms out in my hand, and he took them like – It was like second nature, and he took out the old wilted ones from his hair and put the fresh ones in, and just said, "Come on."
There's actually on your YouTube channel you have that, right?
Yes, it's, yes. The meeting of
What's your YouTube channel? Because you have a lot of great things on there.
Yeah, it's called Conscious Streams, and it's Conscious Streams with an S at the end. So it's all one word, Conscious Streams.
So I wanted to dive in a little bit into the telepathy. What does if because some people may be experiencing it, and then they're like, okay, am I going crazy or am I really having a telepathic message?
Yes.
In the best way you can explain it in English, what does it feel like? How do you know the difference?
Well, usually when they the best way to actually train oneself to actually become be able to maintain the psychic communications is to get to that point of finding silence within the mind, because then you have the ability to determine the difference. And you're going to know there'll be a frequency when you are psychically connected to someone. You could actually work with someone else who, you know, that has the psychic abilities. And how will you find that out? Is like someone, you know, you can work with someone if you're thinking of someone and all of a sudden they call you. And you go, wow, I was just thinking about you, or they just sent you an email. So that's a person that's letting you know that you both have the ability to actually to work on this level of communication. So don't try with someone that you haven't connected with on a profound, level. You know, like when I'm thinking of someone, and next thing I know, they call me or they send me a text or an email or Facebook. You know, and that's one of the key things. Those are the people that you can work with and start to hone those skills. And there are many ways of actually establishing it. Again, the more the silence the mind is, the easier you can discern the difference. And what's really amazing about the Siddha, and his name is Maha Ananda Siddha. We also call him the cell phone Siddha, because he wears no clothes except for this one wrap that he wears for 364 days a year. He wears it like every day. You know, and he never changes, but he has a cell phone tucked in, and he uses it because people are not listening. You know, because he sends people psychic messages all the time, but they cannot determine the difference because of all the noise, the interference in their minds. So he calls them if they don't hear him. You know, so it's really interesting, you know, when we start to understand. He uses the technology just like we would, you know, to get a message to someone. So, but he can psychically constantly communicate with people. But then the ones that aren't listening, he uses his cell phone. So, but that, you know, what we understand, that's like the first, you know, that's the first level. I mean, we're almost at the point where now we have communications with these little dots in our ears, you know, the Bluetooth headsets. You know, they're so small, they're going to be in our ear canal. And now we can literally take technology. I have some technology that I work on called oral exciters, and that's A-U-R-A-L. Exciters. And what happens is you could put those on any part of your body as long as you hit a bone, and it'll literally vibrate frequencies, music, words into your body. You'll hear it in the center of your head.
You know what's funny about that technology? The first time I saw something like that was back in 1996 or 1995. This guy at this gym had one, and he put it on the back of my neck, and I could hear the radio like it was in my mind. I was amazed that I saw that technology so long ago.
Exactly. Well, a lot of this technology is coming back again. You know, we've seen this insurgence of a lot of advanced technologies in the 70s and the 80s, but they used for different aspects. But now, you know, like this technology is being used for people who, you know, for the deaf, you know, because they realize that they can hear in a different way. When they understand that, you know, like if I take one of these devices and put it at a certain point on the base of your skull, you'll hear the sound right in the dead center of your mind.
Yes.
You don't hear it through your ears. You hear it in the center of your mind. And so that's what we have to understand, this level of oscillation that can happen within the physical body. So we can literally, we hone ourselves to hear on a different level. You know, so for deaf people, that's going to be monumental, especially if they've heard before. There was actually, I put a little caption on of my Facebook page a few days ago about that technology being used and actually used on a girl who actually heard for the first time with this technology. And she was literally overwhelmed because she never heard tones before. She never heard voices before. And when they turned it on, all she could do was cry and just hold herself because she was overwhelmed. You know, and so we don't understand, you know, that, you know, how the body has to respond to that when we open it up, you know, to a new experience. You know, we have to integrate, you know, and it takes a few days before we find that balance. You know, so yeah, it's exciting how but you know, one of the things is to realize is that we're using our technology on a higher consciousness now.
Yeah,
we've gone through that war and you know, almost every technology that was profound, you know, the military wanted it. The military wanted to use it for military applications, you know, and so we saw a lot of things, you know, like disappear because of that, you know, yeah. And, you know, just get, you know, just become military technologies or devices.
On I think the last conference you did in California, you were talking – I saw on your YouTube channel, you were talking about when you went over to, what was his name? That big dome with the contactee.
George Van Tassel, the Integratron?
Yes.
The Integratron, yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what about it?
No, I was going to say, tell us a little more about it, because you went there and you were talking with the two women who own it.
Yes. And, what was really amazing about that is that I was seeking the knowledge, you know, to really understand the frailty of the human system. And knowing just in my own research that there are answers that we can literally, reinforce the human system, clear it, you know, to live in a higher way of life, you know. And it's not about anti-aging. You know, I don't use those terms because, again, you know, that, you know, we could see plastic surgery has turned anti-aging into almost like a circus act. You know, what we understand is that people are trying to look youthful from the outside instead of finding that youthfulness from the inside. So my research was to get in and to understand the true cellular understanding of the human system. So in my journeys, all of a sudden I heard about the Integratron, which George Van Tassel created, you know, back in the 50s, and it took him over 24 years to construct the dome. And he never got to turn it on. He passed away, I think it was about 1974, when he died of a heart attack. But the location, the geometry of the structure, and you know, using and putting it on the ley lines that are very powerful out in the middle of Landers, California, which is about 40 miles outside of Palm Springs, is really, really amazing when we understand and we step into that place. And it's literally a vortex. It's a very powerful, energetic vortex on its own. But then when you go inside the dome is an accumulator of the energy. So that answered almost everything I needed to actually bring a practical technology forth, is to understand what he was doing. And I literally told the owners, I said, in 6 months, I will have a prototype of what this was supposed to be. And they said, oh, yeah, we've heard that a lot in the 14 years we've owned this place. I said, I'll be back in 6 months. And I literally did. I came back with this prototype and of this technology, and how I confirmed it and quantified it was I would measure it at home and measure its field. And it would put out about a 12-foot diameter field. And then I would take it and I'd put it inside the dome. And the dome is a 50-foot hemisphere. It has two levels to it. There's an upper and a lower. The upper was actually the bombardment chamber. That's where the actual reaction would have happened within the bombarding of the energy fields. And then you'd be downstairs. But what we would do is we would take the technology upstairs and I would turn it on. And then the field would measure 35, 40 feet. Just from putting it in this structure. So when we understand the amplification principles, then I started to take the same understanding, and I would go to Egypt, and I would go into the temples, into the holiest of holies, you know, where actually the grids would be the same, just like George Van Tassel would do, and they would, the Egyptians knew exactly where the powerful grid intersection points were. And at that intersect, that's where they would put the holiest of holies chamber of the temple. And that's where they would accumulate the highest level of energy that they possibly could. And every time I would bring one of these little technologies in there, the field would go out exponentially, like 10 times it's normal. Mm. Yeah.
So the technology that you're talking about, is that did I see that one?
Yes, you did see that. That was actually one of the technologies that I brought to Japan my first time there, and you were there for that ceremony. That is called the life stream generator, and that is a very interesting term that and how it gave its name. It was very obvious when I built the prototype of the first time, is that I realized that this is putting energy back into our system, thus recharging us, thus bringing us life. And so that's the life stream. It was very clear that was what to name it. And after 7 years of spreading this consciously around the world, literally doctors and, you know, people just say this is prana. This actually puts energy back into our systems. And so now I'm starting to connect the dots. My journey to India and understanding what energy is and how we receive it. And it's all based on our belief structures. You know, it's like you have to eat to survive. You have to eat this food to live. You know, and actually kids, you know, when they're connected at such a young age, they really don't need to eat. We make them eat. You know, we're programming them, as Tom said. It's like literally we start to be influenced by the elders, and they tell us in their beliefs what we have to do. And so this is where it gets interesting when we start to connect the dots. So then all of a sudden you meet someone who was 72 years old, had one of the highest enlightenment experiences that a human could possibly do without leaving the body, literally transmutes himself and no longer eats food or drinks water for nearly 9 years, and then lays in a bed of fire, you know, to receive his prana. And then the next miracle is like when you actually watch them, when they stand there, they start to ooze the amrita. And the amrita is this nectar that happens, that actually comes out of the soft palate at the top of the mouth. When you reach a certain state of enlightenment, then all of a sudden you start to produce this nectar. Then it literally drips out and a hole opens up in the top of your head, you know, at the top of your mouth, you know, at the soft palate. If you take your tongue and you go up to the top of your mouth and you go back, you'll feel where the bone and then the soft tissue is. That opens up and literally the glands start to produce this nectar, and that feeds the body. Mm-hmm. And so to watch it ooze out of him, it's pretty darn amazing.
Yeah, I've
imagine.
I've definitely heard a lot of people talk about that. When you reach a certain level, you start to ooze that, and at first it supposedly is like a very bitter because of the toxins, and then it becomes sweeter and sweeter.
Yeah, you have to go through a major detox. You know, ever since I've been back to India, or since I went to India, the last day that I smelled anything was 2 days after I returned, and I've had no sense of smell since. Absolutely. Wow. No sense of smell. And since then, I've lost about 70% of my taste for food. So it's very interesting. All of a sudden, you have a completely different relationship to foods that you no longer crave, you no longer can taste. And then you realize, do I really need to eat this food to survive? So I know what I'm going through is an amazing gift, you know, and I have to go through this literally, this detox. And I literally, you know, just like this week, I had a wisdom tooth that had to come out, and I just knew, you know, I was checking my energetic pathways, and this wisdom tooth was so energetically out of balance, it was throwing me off, and I knew I had to have it removed. So I went to see the dentist on, you know, last Thursday, and I said, please pull this tooth. And he goes, how did you know it needed to come out? I go, it's telling me it has to come out. And he goes, you're right, it had an infection in it. And it was all the way going into your sinuses. And I said, I'm like, yeah. And he goes, that was a good call. And so it's stuff like that. We just have to trust. you know, and actually get into that communication with ourselves. And this is where we start to bring balance within our own selves. But we also have to prepare for the conscious shift. You know, and that's one of the things is all of a sudden, if you want to induce a Kundalini experience in your physical body, but your physical body is not ready, that could be a very unpleasant activation.
Hmm. Yeah.
So we need to prepare the body for, you know, and the mind as well.
So I'm wondering if this is all has something to do with the fact that I've about 2 years ago, my appetite just started tapering off. I mean, less and less and less and less and less food.
Yes.
I eat one meal a day now. And, you know, I'll have a snack or something in the morning, but it's like one meal. And I'm still just as heavy as I was before. I feel just as good. Actually, I feel better now. But anyways, yeah, I don't know. I've actually remarked on this a couple times where it's like, damn, you know, I'm only eating one meal a day. And how, you know, kind of puzzled me, like, how am I doing this?
Yeah, well, that's good that you're actually asking that question. How am I doing this?
Yeah, that's been happening to me as well. I've been eating one meal a day. I mean, unless it's the weekend and my wife gets hungry, and if I don't feed her, she mistreats me. But anyway, that's a different story. But
I'll make sure she hears that clip, Ramon, by the way.
Yeah, right? No, but I've noticed that ever since I started meditating years back that, yeah, my need for food has gotten less and less.
Yes. Yeah, that – well, when we understand, when we raise our vibration – you know, we have to understand when the vibration increases, just like when I talked about energy on the last show, at higher frequencies, it's much more efficient. You know, you need less of it, for one thing. Even in our practicality with our technology, if we use 400 cycle frequency instead of 60 cycles, you know, the technology works so much more efficiently.
You know, we had we were just talking about this a couple of days ago with the guy, we'll just call him Benny. He was actually talking about the same thing, and I mentioned your name in the interview for those of you who listen to it. So I said there's a guy that we're interviewing next week that worked for Lockheed that found out that when you do that, it actually technology works better, and it's actually good for you instead of being poisonous the way our lights are now, for example.
Yes. Well, we're actually, when we realize, you know, I've noticed like there's something that's pretty interesting that's happening in the evolution of technology. Fortunately, is that it's not going to happen for a long time. When we're looking at how our light bulb is taking this aggressive change.
Right.
And one of these technologies that infiltrated is, and who knows where in the heck it came from, is CFL technology, compact fluorescence.
Right.
You know, so all when we look at where it started, a light bulb is literally a device that has a filament inside and a glass housing that creates a vacuum around the filament. And you apply 110 volts to it, and it lights up. Now, you buy a compact fluorescent. It has electronic circuitry in it. You know, it has certain, inert gases and also mercury. You know, so all of a sudden, it's like, you know, kids will not even understand how to make a simple light bulb in 10 years if we keep going this way.
Yeah.
You know, of what illumination was, you know, candlelight. You know, so now, you know, compact fluorescent, fortunately, it's getting the bad rap that it should. Yeah, it does save energy, but we got to look at the long run. You know, to dispose of them, it's literally toxic.
Yeah, you don't want to break one in your house because you're supposed to call the EPA if you do, and then they basically gut your house.
Almost, yeah. I mean, what we understand is like we're almost allowing this, you know, to step into our technology of acceptance. But a lot of people are onto it, and it's also noisy technology too. I'll take an EMF meter, electromagnetic frequency meter, and measure an incandescent bulb. I won't get any radiation from it at all. You put it up to a compact fluorescent, it goes off the wall.
Yeah.
You know, so you definitely don't want one near your head because it's just putting the dirtiest of noise into your energy field. So they're okay if they're eight feet up in the ceiling, you know, but it's still pollution in one way. But fortunately, we're lucky because LEDs are making this huge leap. That's, you know, and that level of lighting is so much more efficient on so many levels.
Oh yeah.
Can you explain the difference between LED and
actually Ramon, but
we
want to talk about if we can do that in the next hour. We're rapidly hitting the top of the hour. So John, you want to leave our BBS listeners with any parting comments?
Well, let's say the parting comments in regards is just, you know, really be aware of the things that are around us. You know, like if you look at like some of my videos, when I talk about shifting consciousness, it's literally about realizing what is in front of you, what you're holding, and actually see it for what it really is. And look as deep as you can, question, you know, what you've been told it is, and literally go on the journey of looking deeper.
Okay. What's your website?
It's zeropointresearch.com. At zeropoint research.com. It's all one word.
Great. And his YouTube page is Conscious Streams.
Yes.
And check out John's material. He's got some really interesting stuff in there. So we will catch all you guys after Brooks' show in the archives and hit that member button and join the 100th monkey. Condemnation without the investigation is the height of ignorance. We love you guys.
The problem that divide the world of black.